episodes, but I managed to get back in the chair, and we are joined today by Rachel Paul. Welcome, Rachel.
Hi. Thank you for inviting me. I'm so happy to be here.
Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your expertise. Rachel Paul is the founder of Simply Veterinary Coaching and has been working with veterinary professionals for about a decade now. Is that right, Rachel?
Yeah, almost.
Long suffering. As a vet myself, I think I can say that. So today, Rachel is going to talk to us about how to become an inspirational leader, which is such an important topic. But before I hand over to Rachel, I just want to let everyone know, we've got loads of attendees today. I want to let everyone know that if you have any questions along the way, please post them either in the Q&A or the chat section, and we will pick them up at the end. For now, with no further ado, I'm going to hand over to you, Rachel, and sit back and listen to what you have to tell us.
Amazing. Thank you, Tom. Hi, everyone. I can't see you, but I know you're there. So thank you for the introduction. And I thought a good place to kick off all of this would be to start with what even is an inspirational leader. And I was researching this, and I was looking at the origin of the word, and it comes from the Latin word, which I'm going to butcher completely, inspiratus, to breathe into, to inspire. And in English, it means the drawing of air into the lungs. But before inspiration was used to refer to breath, it had a distinctly theological meaning, referring to a divine influence upon a person from a divine entity, very mystical. In the context of the veterinary profession, an inspirational veterinary leader is someone who is called to a mission that's even bigger than themselves. Called by what or who doesn't matter, but take it as you wish. But there's this deeper yearning from within to step up. And in the process of stepping up, they become the change they want to see. They become a sort of way shower, lighting the path for others to move on to. And you could also say that they breathe inspiration into others. But why does this even matter? Why am I even talking about this topic? Well, I think you all know the veterinary industry is shifting in a really big way. The whole world is at the moment, but in particular, the veterinary industry is changing a lot. And being a veterinary leader, I think, carries more responsibility than ever. And people's expectations of their leader are bigger and clearer than ever. A new kind of leadership is critical now to the future of the profession. You know, the old school sort of dictatorial authoritarian leadership style is very out of date now and definitely no longer produces really helpful results. It does have its place, though, I have to say, you know, in a high stress environment, in emergency scenarios, for example, but not in the context of creating positive, nurturing cultures and engaged, empowered, and more importantly, fulfilled teams where there's collaboration, authenticity, and creativity are all encouraged. And the leaders in the veterinary profession today have massive influence over what happens next, what change comes first, and actually how quickly that change happens. But a lot is required from leaders professionally and personally to have that influence. Especially since leadership across the whole globe is changing. And what's changing is you will no longer be accepted and respected as a leader simply due to a job title. And good enough leadership, I don't think is good enough anymore. Great leadership seems to no longer be enough either. It's inspirational leadership that's required of you now. And in order to show up as an inspirational leader, you're going to have to take bold, courageous action in not just your physical environment as well, but, you know, your internal world. And to do all of this, well, your impact as a leader will grow as quickly as you do. I'll just say that. It's time to be the change you want to see in the profession, and it starts with you. Now, already, I imagine, you may be thinking, well, wow, that sounds like a heck of a job, Rachel. And I suppose your imagination could run wild with thoughts of, am I actually right for this? You know, do I fit the profile? So to help you with that, I just want to bust some myths about what it means to be an inspirational leader. There are many out there, and I think I'm bringing the main ones to you today. Myth number one is that you have to be an extrovert to be an inspirational leader. And this is a big one for me because I'm an introvert, full-blown introvert. It means I get my energy from being alone with myself, with my thoughts, in quiet spaces. My husband is the luckiest man alive because I ask nothing of him other than to feed me. Extroverts, on the other hand, gain energy from being around people and will feel energized after spending the day around other people. The work of an inspirational veterinary leader doesn't fully exist out there in the actions that you're taking. It actually starts in here. And you have to be able to connect easily with your inner world and be comfortable being with your thoughts and your feelings and facing discomfort, not just once, but over and over and over again. And then that turns into meaningful action. Now, of course, you also have to be visible to your team. It's no good sort of sitting in the back office and trying to lead from there. Inspirational leadership is also about hands-on motivating and inspiring people, leading change, promoting a mission. But if you lean more one way than the other, you know, you might sit more in the introvert camp or the extrovert camp. The key is to manage your energy appropriately so that you can re-energize appropriately or retreat appropriately in order to give the best of yourself to others. So it is a complete myth that you have to be an extrovert, but you also can't be a complete introvert. It's all about balance. Love that word, balance. Myth number two is that your position determines leadership, but a job title does not a leader make. No leader can lead, effectively anyway, without the buy-in, the trust and the respect of their team. And I'll quote Brian Tracy in saying that being an inspirational leader is about becoming the leader people would follow voluntarily, even if you had no title or position. And I wonder if you know someone like that, because I certainly do. I know a few people like that. You see, leadership is a mindset. Leadership is a way of being. It shows up in all areas of your life, and it starts with leading yourself first. And leadership isn't necessarily about what you do either. It's about who you are. And, you know, I think we have many inspirational leaders in the profession, but many of them aren't in official leadership roles. It's the person who leads themselves quietly in the background. It's the person who acknowledges others and celebrates their contributions. It's the person who is willing to help others achieve greatness before themselves. The job title is definitely not the destination. I would argue it's just the beginning. Myth number three that I'll bust very quickly. Leaders are born. I ran a poll on this recently and got quite a mixed response, actually. I don't believe leaders are born. I think leadership is a choice. It's a set of behaviours, beliefs, lots of trial and error, lots of mistakes, and an abundance of growth and evolution over time. Myth number four is interesting. Great leaders are really intelligent. It's a combination of intellect, emotional intelligence, and spiritual intelligence too. So spiritual intelligence being a sort of connection to self or your higher self even, and a connection to meaning and purpose and ethics. It's not about knowing it all, because nobody could know it all, right? It's not what you know that counts anyway. It's actually what you do with it. It's how you apply it. And sometimes It's about not knowing. Leaders do not know everything. That's another myth, that leaders do know everything. Leaders don't know everything, but they have the emotional and spiritual intelligence alongside intellect to accept the views and opinions of others, to demonstrate humility, to get it wrong sometimes, to fail, to fall, to learn from it, to grow from it and emerge stronger every time. Having that balance of intellect, emotional and spiritual intelligence means you can navigate what I call the four milestones of the leadership growth cycle with ease. I've made a blog about it on my website if you want to have a look. Basically, as leaders, we navigate through this cycle repeatedly, not just once, many times. And it's based on the work of Joseph Campbell. It's a concept he created called the Hero's Journey. And it depicts the stages that you go through in the journey of life through difficult situations. And it's a storyline used in most movies. And now you know this, next time you watch a movie, you won't be able to watch it without thinking about what I've just said. If you look up the hero's journey, then watch film, it changes everything. So yes, there's a blog on my website that refers to that. Myth number five, inspirational leadership is a high intensity role. So some people might think that being an inspirational leader is this big, busy job that requires a lot from you on a day-to-day basis, and it might be a role that you can't keep up with, possibly. I mean, who can be inspirational 24/7? That's a big ask of yourself, isn't it? But here's something that might reassure you. Consistency beats intensity always. If you focus on intensity, your flame will burn out quicker. If you focus on consistency, it's sustainable and actually far more inspiring to other people. As per a favourite quote of mine, if you want to be taken seriously, be consistent. A consistent leader with good values and morals, who sets the example of balance and structure and focus for their team, will earn more trust and respect from their team than someone who's, you know, very up and down or a bit flaky. And your team become a reflection of you as well in more ways than one. So if you're consistent, you will see the same behaviours in your team too. So forget intensity, throw it out, focus on consistency always. And at the same time, this doesn't mean that you're on all the time, because when I've talked about this with people before, the response has been, you know, not only do I have my vet hat, my parent hat, my friend hat, and all the other roles that require you to wear all the hats, you know, now I've got this inspirational leader hat and one more hat on my head, and I think my head's going to fall off. Being an inspirational leader doesn't mean that you're on your A game all the time. It's another argument against intensity. If your inspirational leader hat is on all the time, that's too much, that's intense. Being an inspirational leader does take effort, it does take consistency, but it also requires authenticity. Being an inspirational leader shouldn't be an act that you have to keep up all day. It isn't a mask that you wear all day and then take off at the end of the day. Once you've mastered the five key ingredients, which I'm going to talk about later, it actually just becomes a way of being, a series of automatic behaviours and positive habits and positive language. It becomes part of who you are. It's a life choice. It comes easy in the end. And you end up not just being inspirational at work, you become inspirational everywhere, because it becomes part of who you are. So you're not on all the time. So I'm going to move on. And in order to tell you how to become an inspirational leader, which is the purpose of this webinar today, I just want to provide some contrast, first of all, and talk to you a bit about how not to become an inspirational veterinary leader. And I'm going to walk you through nine mistakes that I see people make that prevent them from going from good to great to inspirational. And I can't see the chat box, but maybe I'll see it at the end. But what I'd love to know is, for every mistake or behaviour that I talk about in a moment, give yourself one point. Now, the point is that the more points you get it means maybe there's a little bit more work to do. The lower your score, the more inspirational you are. But let's see how we get on. So number one, how not to be an inspirational leader is trying to be everything to everyone all the time. And in action, this would be running around, doing busy work, fighting small fires, reacting instead of being proactive, you know, getting sucked into the day-to-day rather than being on the business. All of these things really limit your creativity as a leader. Number two, making it about you. Leadership is not about you. This was a really hard lesson for me to learn a few years ago. Many years ago. It was really tough, really interesting. But then I came to realise that leadership is not about you, but it's actually all about you because it starts with you. But this in action would be you maybe taking things too personally. You know, those moans and groans and grumbles from colleagues and clients or official complaints. It would be taking the spotlight instead of being the spotlight and shining the light on others. It would be you leading with your own interests as priority rather than the team that you're serving. Number three is saving instead of serving your people. So this in action would be that maybe you're in a situation with somebody and rather than coaching someone through the problem, you may just provide the answer because that's quicker, right? I mean, you know a lot, so you might as well. Or you do the job for them, but that's limiting their creativity and their learning potential. You may also take on too much as a leader and then actually your people rely on you too much. And then people unconsciously expect you to always be there to help them and then don't actually think for themselves as much in the end. So that would be saving instead of serving. Number four, managing instead of leading. I'm sure we've all heard the differentiation between managing and leading. So in action, this is directing people rather than influencing people. It's about commanding, controlling, organising, coordinating and telling rather than inspiring and enabling through this sort of co-creation relationship. It's making decisions for people rather than giving your input to combine with their own thoughts to make their own decision. Number five, trying to manage time but not managing your energy. It's human nature to overestimate what you can get done in a day. I've literally done that today. But leaders are particularly good at this for some reason. So in action, this might be trying to manage time by putting in the hours, you know, working late, working evenings and weekends at home, catching up, all in the hope that you'll get more done in the long run. But you're just chasing your tail continuously. You can't actually manage time as a resource. You can't manipulate time. Wouldn't that be amazing? But you can manage another resource, which is energy. Your energy. The energy you bring to the work that you do and how you manage that, which impacts then how you use and maximise your time. So number six, being reactive instead of proactive. So in action, this is focusing on problems and how to fix them when they surface. It's tackling small fires as they start, which then steals the time you need to focus on the bigger, more important fires, which ironically, if you put those big fires out, they'd probably put the small fires out automatically anyway. It's about making urgent decisions and having the need to feel in control all the time. It's being in the business rather than having time on it to be creative, to problem solve and to have, you know, flashes of inspiration about how to move forward. And this applies to recruitment too, which I actually consider to be one of the key ingredients to inspirational leadership, which I'll talk about later. If you're starting your recruitment process only because someone has resigned, you're starting from scratch. Your team need to know that you're doing more than thinking about the problem. They need to know that you're future-proofing the practice. there's a quote that I think really sums this up quite nicely from John Maxwell. If you're proactive, you focus on preparing. If you're reactive, you end up focusing on repairing. Number seven, letting your past dictate your future and shape your leadership. Now, this is really interesting. Unless you know with absolute certainty what biases you have that cloud the lens through which you see and experience and interpret the world, you could be letting your past dictate who you are now and sort of shape who you are as a leader. In action, this could be a variety of behaviours depending on your early life and work experiences that are shaping who you are now. But for example, it could be that you had incredibly, or you have incredibly high and potentially unattainable expectations of your team because you had incredibly career-driven parents who instilled in you that anything less than 110% effort is unacceptable. It could be about your beliefs around leadership and that early work experiences taught you that leadership is about being in charge, it's about exercising power and giving orders, which leads to being inflexible in your leadership approach, perhaps not taking the opinions of others on board very easily, you know, having a stiff upper lip and avoiding vulnerability. The key here is to say that what a leader believes about people, the profession, or themselves affects what they do. And this is why understanding yourself is considered to be such an important part of leadership development and becoming a better leader. Number eight, not being at peace with who you are. Oh, that goes a bit deep, doesn't it? I saved the best till last. If you don't have a clear sense of who you are or you feel insecure about who you are, it has an impact on the comfort and security of those around you. An insecure leader is driven by wanting to be liked. They want people to think well of them all the time. They often don't handle conflicts very well and maybe shy away from delicate issues. They might micromanage. They might become defensive when people offer opposing viewpoints. And this is probably key. They may actually hold back their smartest and highest achieving people in the team because they see them as threats. Insecure leadership shackles and constrains your people and you as well. Number nine, I'm really curious about how you've scored yourself so far. I'm sure we've got some very inspirational leaders in the room with us here. Number nine is being incongruent. So this is when what you say doesn't match what you do. You might even have a do what I say, not what I do attitude. Now, people may still admire you, but they may not respect you. And no one wants to work for a boss who gives lip service to aspirations and then doesn't follow up with meaningful action. Now, it's also about your energy, because a leader can change the mood of a room just by walking in. When you live according to your values and you ensure your actions are aligned with your speech, you deepen your presence. Your words carry more weight. People take your word as truth rather than opinion, and they do what you ask of them because they believe in you. And that really does sum up what an inspirational leader is. They inspire others, they inspire followers, and people believe in them. So as I say, I bet we have a room full of low scores. I bet you're all zeros and ones. So remember, it was a point for each mistake you recognise in yourself. So if you have a higher score, you're probably a great leader and dipping into inspirational, but perhaps maybe just need more consistency with things. If you have a sort of lower end score, which is good, it means you're doing a great job and you're probably amazingly inspirational, but it still pays to consider what your blind spots are, because I think we always have them. And anyone who says they don't have them, they definitely do. We can't see things in ourselves. Other people can. We're blind to them, hence why they're called blind spots. So, on to the good stuff, the reasons you're here. the five key ingredients that make an inspirational leader and why they matter. And also for each one, I'm going to give you my top tip for strengthening this area for yourself starting today. So the first key ingredient is energy and flow. So what's this about? You've heard me talk a little bit about it already. Energy management. Energy management is the new time management. The topic of energy is more relevant in today's world than ever because of the ever-increasing demands that just seem to fill our plates. Now, as caring and compassionate people, veterinary professionals want to please and they want to make a difference in people's lives. But this can often lead to being overcommitted but under-resourced. Perhaps that's a situation you feel is quite close to home for you at the moment. We know that time is a finite resource, so I don't believe that time management is a solution to the challenge of being overcommitted. The resource we can play with here is energy. So energy can be expanded, it can be renewed, but first we must identify what expands our energy and what drains it, because it's different for everybody. So I'm going to walk you through it briefly here. It's also in a blog on my website called Are You Being Energy Efficient? Step one is to make a list of all the people, the places, the things, the habits, behaviours or rituals in your life that fill you with energy. And then make a list of all the people, the places, the things, the habits, behaviours or rituals in your life that drain you of your energy. Just take a really honest assessment of that as well. The next step would be to look at the things that drain you and ask yourself, what can I do to reduce or remove this from my life? How could I turn this activity that drains me into something that's fun, something that actually expands my energy? And then what are the top two or three things I can actually commit to doing this week that will actually make a difference here? And then what's the one thing I can commit to doing this week that will expand my energy? And then once you've done that, you can take yourself into the future. You can imagine yourself 1 week from now. Imagine that you've called me on the phone and you're excitedly sharing with me what's happened as a result of taking these actions. You're very excited. We're having a chat. It's Friday evening. Rachel, I've had the best week ever. I'm completely energized. I'm usually just utterly exhausted. What else are you saying to me? How are you feeling? What's shifted in your life as a result of this commitment that you made to yourself? Then you come back to the present moment and then you go and do the thing. If you did this exercise every week, your life will completely transform, I promise. Ingredient number two, let's move on. Identity, values and authenticity. So what is this? Well, identity is who you are at home, at work, as a leader. Your values are what's important to you. They drive you, they motivate you, they allow you to make meaningful decisions about your life. They're sort of like a compass for you, for moving through life in a way that's aligned with who you are. And authenticity is alignment in action. It's you showing up with a clear sense of who you are and your place in the world. It's deep self-awareness, transparency, honesty, humility, vulnerability, all of those things. So why does identity, values and authenticity matter? If you have a clear sense of who you are, you feel comfortable and secure around yourself, and others do as well. It makes it easier to connect with yourself and with others, and it allows you to be more memorable and have an even bigger impact as a leader. Now, people often think that their identity is just who they are right now, but it's also about who you want to become. Identity is a choice. You can decide what kind of leader you want to be, and you can develop the thoughts, the actions, and the behaviours to bridge that gap. Being in touch with your values, the big benefit of that is that it reduces decision fatigue and anxiety. As a leader, you make, oh my goodness, I don't know how many decisions in a day. A normal human being makes thousands. I think it's something like 90,000, but correct me if I'm wrong, but it's many decisions in a day. It's ridiculous. As a leader, there's more because you've got other people's decisions to support as well. So it reduces decision fatigue and anxiety if you're in touch with your values, because you trust yourself more when you're being true to yourself and when you're honouring your values. And you can make really meaningful decisions and you can make them quickly. Now, we all have core values that stay with us throughout our lifetime, and then we have others that sort of shift as we grow, as we evolve, as our life circumstances change. You know, if you become a parent, you'll notice your values shifting slightly. And we also have values that are relevant to different parts of our lives. And, you know, yes, there's a lot of overlap for sure, but knowing your values as a leader and living them is what creates the culture of a practice. It literally dictates what the culture of a practice is going to be. So having a strong values-led culture means people in your team can also make decisions easily. They are clearer and more confident about what is prioritised in the practice. You know, if they're faced with a difficult decision, or a difficult situation rather, they can think, you know, I know that my boss would want me to focus on our core value of integrity in this situation, and they would take the right action that will produce an outcome that aligns with the value of integrity. And this is why I keep saying it all starts with you. Now, I have an ebook that walks you through how to uncover your values and actually also how to do it for your team. And it's a really powerful tool for yourself and a powerful tool to engage with your team as well. If you want a copy of this ebook, if you send me an email to rachel@simplyveterinarycoaching.com, Rachel is R-A-C-H-A-E-L @simplyveterinarycoaching.com, just send me a blank email with maybe ebook in the subject line and I will send you a copy for free. Ingredient number three to be an inspirational veterinary leader is focus, structure and accountability. In many of my coaching sessions with veterinary leaders, there are usually three things they are deficient in that impacts their ability to create a practice that runs smoothly with a happy team and happy clients. And they are structure, focus, and accountability. Now, these three things, they have to be in sync. They have to be in harmony to work. And you can think about these three things as the three legs on a stool. You know, if you knock one away, that stool's going to topple over, right? So if you just had two legs, you might have structure and accountability. But if you lack focus, your attention will be scattered across too many things. You won't really complete anything or do anything really well. If you had focus and accountability as the two legs on your stool, if you lack structure though, it's likely you're going to procrastinate and be far less productive overall. So this is where your stool topples over. If you have all these three things working in harmony, the knock-on impact is huge, because if you demonstrate these behaviours yourself, you'll see it reflected in your team as well. And that means that the practice can be busy, but it doesn't have to be chaotic, because people will feel less stressed, more productive, you'll get a lot more done as a team in a quality manner, and you'll all be working towards a common goal. And if you're all structured, focused and accountable, clients will perceive you as efficient and trustworthy. And they will see your practice as a safe place to bring their pets for the very best care. They will see it as a place where things get done properly. In terms of a top tip, there are many, 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 many tools out there that you can use to enhance focus and structure. Accountability is something that a coach or a mentor is excellent for. It is sometimes quite tricky to keep ourselves accountable. Now, if I spent time with someone in a coaching session, I would be looking at the reasons, you know, the underlying causes of not being focused or not completing tasks or focusing on the wrong things at the wrong time. And for some, it could be a fear of failure. It could be beliefs around what it means to be busy. It could be beliefs around work ethic. It could be beliefs around setting boundaries. But my favourite tool for getting stuff done, which I use myself, is intention setting. So this is about creating a vision and an intention of what you want to create, and then sitting with it and feeling it like you're already living it. And the reason this is so powerful is because our unconscious minds do not know the difference between real and imagined. It really doesn't. It really doesn't. It just takes instruction. And that's why people talk about the power of positive language and affirmations and these types of things. Because your unconscious mind just takes instructions. So your vision, if you say 90 days from now, I want to have achieved XYZ, and you imagine living out that achievement. Now, imagining it by considering where you are in that vision, what you're doing, how you look, how you feel, what's going on around you to know that you've achieved what you wanted to achieve. Then you write it down. This is a really key part. Write it down like it's already happening, like this. So it's the 7th of December and I have achieved XYZ and I have completed this particular project and I have changed that thing and it feels great. I feel accomplished, I feel organised, I feel in control, and my team are really happy because we're fully staffed and they feel more focused and productive. And, you know, having sat down and had those really meaningful one-to-ones with people, I can just sense a more positive atmosphere. I can see people smiling and laughing at each other and collaborating, etc., etc. So you're using the senses to bring it to life, really. You're exploring your vision from the point of view, what do you see, hear and feel? And then you write it down. Once you've done that, this is also in the ebook, by the way. So if you have sent me an email, I will send you a copy. Then you need to consider your key priorities. So in that vision, what is priority to happen? What needs to happen? Is it finding a new vet? Is it doing the one-to-ones? So what are your key priorities? Then you break it down further and determine what the key actions are that you need to take, and also by when. So what has to happen for me to have sat down and done all those one-to-ones 90 days from now? Scheduled and reported and made changes as a result. What has to happen? And then you can make a plan. Now, none of this works without the initial intention setting and creating that really compelling vision of the future. And this quote that I'm about to read out to you in a moment is a really nice reminder of why it's so important. And it really landed with me today as I was writing it out, because it's so true. And it gets me, so I'm sure it's going to get you too. Your current business situation or your current results are a reflection of the decisions that you've made about how you've invested your time in the past. So your current business situation or your current results are a reflection of the decisions that you've made about how you've invested your time in the past. Now, that's one way to keep yourself accountable. Your future self will thank you for setting the intention 90 days earlier, believe me. Ingredient number 4. This perhaps might be the most interesting for everyone, since this is a big topic of conversation right now. Recruitment game. So it could be one of the biggest headaches for leaders in the veterinary profession right now. And this is why it has secured its place in the 5 key ingredients for inspirational leadership. As a leader, you have to be proactive in solving problems, right? So I would say one contributing factor, because there's many, to why recruitment is the way that it is because the industry as a whole has been reactive to the problem rather than proactive. So you have to serve your people by giving them the environment and the resources to do their very best and to feel fulfilled. If you're short-staffed, stressed about recruitment, everyone's overstretched, your impact as an inspirational leader dips significantly. Now, recruitment feels like something that's out of your control, right? A lot of people are saying that to me at the moment, and it can appear that way. You know, there's a vet shortage, there's a recruitment crisis. How can you attract vets if there aren't any? Now, I coach practice owners and leaders on this stuff, and I can do so because I run a very successful veterinary headhunting firm, and I can tell you there are vets out there, but they may not necessarily be on the market. Your next best hire is in a job already, probably perfectly settled, may have a few niggles and moans and groans, but they're mostly satisfied. If you ask them on a scale of 1 to 10, how satisfied are you in this job? They might say, 7, 8 on a good day. So you have to be, or you have to have a proactive strategy to contact these people and a long-term strategy to be visible in the candidate market. Now, that doesn't mean advertising all the time. That can be a mistake because it's not really a good look for your employer brand. But being visible is something slightly different. And this is something that I teach practices. And it is part of my Inspirational Veterinary Leader program, which is launching a couple of months from now. And we're going to take a deep dive into that. But I do want to give you a top tip. And I posted about this on LinkedIn recently because it's just coming up in so many conversations I'm having. My top tip is to know your sparkle. Know your sparkle. If you don't know why you're good, don't expect anyone else to know either. So I've had many conversations with practices, especially recently, who are placing adverts and asking for my advice on what to put in them. If you place an advert, it has to capture your essence. Otherwise, it's just another advert in a sea of adverts. There's many out there. Even if you have the best working hours, great equipment, and you really invest in your people, it doesn't actually matter if the reader can't connect with it. So before you even write your advert, you have to know your sparkle. And the best people to ask are the people working for you now. What do they love about working there? Why do they come back to work for you every day? How do you make them feel valued and fulfilled? Because if they didn't, they wouldn't work for you. It's a candidate's market. They have choice. What are their career goals and how are you helping them to achieve them? What do you do as an employer to keep people happy? And also, what features of the practice stand out? Is it that you have a low staff turnover? If so, why? But you have to get really specific, and I don't think people are being specific enough right now. A common response is, well, we look after each other and we support each other. Great. Everybody says the same thing. What does that even mean? And it will mean a different things for different practices, right? So how do you do that? And it could be in the things that are completely second nature to you that are actually the things you need to shout about, that are actually your sparkle. The final ingredient to be an inspirational veterinary leader is self-mastery. So this is about being able to lead yourself before you can lead others effectively. And it matters because the foundation to inspirational leadership is self-awareness. This means identifying all your blind spots and then actually having a continuous commitment to doing that over and over again. It's about looking at what stories and excuses that you use to justify certain behaviours, or the excuses you use to not do things as well. It's about sharpening your mindset, ensuring you have a growth mindset, expanding your self-development and your team coaching toolbox. Now, ultimately, if your team is a reflection of you, you are going, to an extent, determine the results of your practice. And this is where I'll come full circle again and say that leadership is not about you, but it's all about you because it starts with you. It starts with self-mastery. Now, my top tip for self-mastery, this is actually a really great one. I do enjoy this. This is also a blog on my website if you want to take a look. And I can't remember what I called it now. Something about stories that are shaping your leadership. Let me just take a quick drink. So here's how you explore your story to uncover your beliefs, the things that might be shaping your leadership now, who you are now, and actually uncover some of your blind spots so you can start working on them. So step one is to grab a piece of paper and on that piece of paper, draw a timeline. So I was born here, I am currently here. And along the timeline, you need to pinpoint specific events that happened and specific memories that you have, both positive and negative, by the way. They could be moments of achievement or times you've made mistakes or times when life took a turn that you weren't expecting. It could be memories of your early years with your parents or close family members or memories of other people who you were close to at the time that come to mind. So don't overthink it, because your unconscious mind is actually really clever and knows what needs to come up at this point to help you complete this exercise. So along your timeline, I tend to put the positive stuff at the top, maybe the not so positive things at the bottom, just to separate them slightly. So at the top, pinpoint, you know, life events and memories, positive and negative, and don't put too much thought into what they actually mean right now, just get them down on paper. And it is something that you can choose to do over the course of a few days or a week, actually, because I remember when I sat down to do this, you know, I've only been alive 33 years, but I feel like a lot has happened and I couldn't remember everything. And actually, it's when you're not thinking about it, when you're in the shower or you're in the operating theatre, when you get that flash of inspiration. Oh, yeah, I can put that on my timeline. So you can jot things down as and when they come to mind. The next part of the exercise is to reflect on the themes that emerge from your timeline. And this will be different for everyone. You may notice, I don't know, positive themes of high achievement and success, for example. Or you'll notice a series of events that have created this theme of, I'm not good enough. Again, take your time with it. I don't think you can do it all in one go, and just see what comes up. Now, once you have brought these themes into your conscious awareness, you can now begin to think about how these themes have shaped your beliefs and how these beliefs are currently shaping your leadership. Now, if you complete this exercise and would like to talk it through, I'd love to hear your story. I love hearing people's stories. So you can, again, you can send me an email if you wish. So those are the five key ingredients for inspirational leadership. And these are important because your team is a reflection of you. Leaders need to create leaders, so they need to lead themselves first. And leadership is not about you, but it's all about you. Mastering these five steps means you show up being able to inspire others. Simply by doing the work, you will shine your light differently. And leaders need to ensure they are thriving as an individual so that they're able to create conditions for their people to thrive. And very few will chance upon experiences and learning opportunities and support that are required to get there. You know, our goal is to remove that chance element and actually make it a proactive choice for anyone who has the will to become an inspirational leader. So my advice to you would be, don't just live into a default future. Create it. Create your identity. Create your vision. Create this idea of who you want to be as an inspirational leader. It's a choice. And then don't try to be an inspirational leader. Just be one. So thank you for listening. There's a couple of things I want to leave you with. If you're intrigued about how inspirational you are, if you go to my website, there is the Inspirational Veterinary Leader Scorecard, and you can discover how you score based on the high performance leadership indicators and increase your ability to motivate and inspire others. Generally how it works is you answer about 14 yes or no questions, you get your results instantly, and a personalized report, and you get feedback on how to enhance your score as well. And in the next couple of months, applications are now open for my Inspirational Veterinary Leader Revolution program, which is a 5-month program where I'll be taking a small, cozy group of veterinary leaders from good to great to inspirational. If you would like to know more about that, that is also on my website. But it's about elevating yourself, inspiring change, and serving powerfully. So thank you very much. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Thank you, Rachel. That was great. Really enjoyed that. Just to remind to everyone, I know we had some issues with the chat. I forgot change the permissions around who can chat to who. As I say, I haven't done one of these in a little while, so apologies for that error, but the chat should be working now. The Q&A is certainly working, and that's how some of you let me know about my error with the chat. So that's all open. So please do post in your comments, questions for Rachel, because we're now going to kick off the Q&A. I hate to put you on the spot, Rachel, but I was wondering, is there an example of an inspirational leader that you could give to us that we would, you know, someone famous, someone that we would know? Who do you see as an inspirational leader?
Good question. I think that would be different for everybody, but for me, and maybe this is just my introvert self coming out here, it's the people that aren't celebrities. It's the people you don't hear about. It's the people that are doing amazing things in the world, but they don't need to tell everybody. They just do it. And I can't pinpoint one person because I'm not aware of them. But there are many, many inspiring people out there that just do it.
That's a great answer. And do you think anyone can be a leader, or are there some people that are just fundamentally unsuited to leadership? Is it sort of this, there's that quote from Henry Ford that where he says, whether you think you can or whether you think you can't, you're right. Is that true of leadership too?
Yes, I think so. It very much is about beliefs and whether you're prepared to face yourself. There are many leaders out there in the world that probably shouldn't be leaders because they're very ego-driven. And I see leadership as more of a transpersonal approach. It's beyond ego because it's not about you, right? So I think for a long time, leadership, traditional leadership, has been people who wanted status and power, right? Or that's how I see it. But I think that's changed now. And I think it's sort of getting rid of the old leadership style and bringing in this new inspirational leadership type. So anyone who's stuck in the old way of leadership and isn't prepared to change and adapt, unfortunately, probably won't be taking into the new paradigm, the new shift. Yeah.
Yeah, you do see that. You see the sort of almost a traditional view of leadership is people with very little self-knowledge being eager to inflict themselves on others, right? History can create a little bit of cynicism when it comes to leadership. People maybe look at people that are putting themselves in a position of leadership with some skepticism, some cynicism. How would you advise someone approaching a leadership role or seeking to be a leader in whatever role they have? How would you advise that they overcome or address that kind of cynicism or skepticism?
Yeah, you mean from the team that they're serving?
From the people they're seeking to serve, yeah.
Yeah, ooh. I think that's especially tough if you're coming into a veterinary practice from the outside as a new leader. But also there's an interesting dynamic of when you're moving up within a practice to become a leader, because you suddenly go from colleague, friend to boss. So my key advice there would be to take your time. We all want everything to happen right now, don't we? But actually, there's a big journey involved for the leader, for the people they're leading, the people they're serving. And it's in the journey that the trust and respect is built. It takes time, and you've got to be really, really patient. And all the things I've said today, not making it about you. If you focus solely on serving the people and being in their worlds, understanding what they're feeling, and come up with the solutions for change, they couldn't really ask for more than that. And they'll break eventually, then they'll love you.
I like that. There's a quotation from Tolstoy who says, "The two greatest warriors are patience and time." It sounds like they're your allies with persuading the people that you're seeking to serve that you do have their best interests at heart. Carla here, the chat is lighting up, the Q&A is lighting up. So Carla here says, Simon Sinek has a great one. Leadership has nothing to do with rank, but about who looks to the right of them and to the left of them and cares about how these people are. So leadership is that sounds like leadership is an act of compassion. We have a question here from Amanda who says, what if you are the second in charge and the first in charge, the practice owner, is toxic and doesn't align with this new version of leading?
Oh, that's tough too. leadership is tough in general, but it's but it doesn't have to be. You can make it fun and easy, and simple. I talk a lot about being the change you want to see. Now, obviously, that quote does not come from me. It comes from someone far more inspirational than me, Gandhi. So I think, Amanda, it would be a case of, and you'd have to be really strong and bold and courageous to do this, but you having the beliefs, actions and behaviours that are true to yourself, true to the values of the practice, true to the integrity of the practice, and true to what the people in the practice actually need. And it will only, not with the intention of highlighting the person in charge, perhaps not aligning, but it will just do it on its own. You've got to be the change you want to see, and it's not going to be an easy task, but it will come good in the end. It will. It has to. It always does.
Great. And Tracy says, and a special thank you to Tracy, because I think Tracy was the first one that flagged my confidence around the chat, so appreciate that, Tracy. And Tracy asks, what would you suggest for leaders who need to encourage reluctant leaders? I find some new DVMs, new vets, do not want to acknowledge their ability to impact hostile morale and direction. They want to just do their job and have the rest of the team lead themselves. So how would you, as a leader, how would you advise these leaders to encourage other reluctant leaders? Because you said something very interesting there, that part of the job of leadership is to create new leaders, right? And so I guess Tracy's asking, what if they don't want to? What'd you do?
Well, this is where I would spend some time really digging around in their values. Because ultimately, it could be they're not the right people to be in a leadership role. I mean, that's an option. But maybe it just hasn't been uncovered yet. And so the exercise of uncovering someone's values and sitting them down and asking, you know, what's important to you about being a vet? What's important to you about being a leader? Now, if they say power and status and control, a few red flags there, and maybe you'd want to then work with that and address that. And if you can't change them, and there's this model, it sounds so harsh, and now I'm saying it, I wish I hadn't opened my mouth, but there's a model called FIFO, fit in or go away, using swear words, fit in or go away. And that ultimately could be what has to happen. But if you can actually really get to the bottom of why these people wanted to be in that position in the first place, what drives them, what they're actually really passionate about beneath the surface, then you can use that to motivate them and nudge them in the right direction. But they also have to want it, Tracy. And I know this is actually complex, and but that's where I would start. Where it goes after that is entirely up to them, but that's where I would start, eliciting their values. And it's in the ebook, Tracy, that I have, if you want me to send it to you.
People seeking status and control for its own sake. Are you referencing a recent leadership election by any chance there, Rachel? You don't have to answer that one. That's not good political. In terms of controversial hot topics, and this, someone I know as an inspirational leader asks, is the level of inspirational leadership different in veterinary clinics compared to other sectors? Why?
Let me just clarify, is it different in the veterinary profession compared to other sectors? Is that what you said?
Yeah, do we have more or fewer inspirational leaders within veterinary medicine, I think is really the question. What's the quality? Does it have a different flavour? I think that's where this is driving at.
Yeah, I am super passionate about leadership in the veterinary profession because it's such a meaningful industry led by love for animals. I mean, what more could you ask for? And the people in the profession are in it because they're caring. And compare that to a really corporate environment in another industry. It's just worlds apart. Corporate is about the opposite of authenticity, I would say. It's showing up to show off, whereas veterinary is just people are serving the pets and serving the clients. So there is a big difference. And I do think that the veterinary profession has many inspirational leaders. The one thing that's holding leadership back in the veterinary profession is people's beliefs in themselves. It's a common trait of veterinary professionals to have a little bit of low self-worth, or they just haven't had it drawn out of them yet. So they don't, there are many people that I think want to step into leadership positions, and I've spoken to many of them, but they hold themselves back from doing it because they don't think they're good enough or experienced enough or those sorts of things. We need more of them. We need to encourage people.
Yeah, I like this theme of authenticity. There's a celebrity leader that I respect very, very much is Dolly Parton. And she says, find out who you are and do it on purpose. I like that a lot. In that one, she talks about corporates. Carla just posted in the chat, there are a lot of corporates in veterinary now. And this went on to ask, have you seen a change in the quality of leadership in the veterinary industry due to consolidation? In theory, it should improve the quality with more professional head offices leading many clinics. Is that what you've seen? That's his question.
Yeah. In some ways, it has provided more focus and structure to the leaders in the profession. More CPD opportunities, more training. The corporates are very, very good, aren't they, at training and opportunities for further learning, you know, paying for people to do the ILM Level 5 leadership and management diploma thing and all the other courses. I also think it's limiting people's creativity. Corporate structures do have structure and they do have rules. And I think it means that people might be required to lead more with logic than intuition. And I think an inspirational veterinary leader needs to be able to lead into both, and perhaps intuition more than logic. But when you do have a bit of red tape, but not all corporates are like that. You know, some of them kind of leave their clinical directors alone to get on with it. But and then you just have to focus what you can do on a day-to-day basis and to be the change in your practice. But it's definitely has its pros and cons. Lots more training, lots more structure, which is what leadership needed. But we don't want to limit the people either. And I think there's a bit of that happening.
Okay. And just sort of switching gears for a moment here, Rachel. Sandy asks, when you reference energy and flow, what tips do you like to use when it comes to the things that drain you? How do you like to flip your perspective?
Yeah. So, let me think of a recent example. I don't know if she's here, and obviously I won't identify her, but it was in a coaching session, and we were talking about housework, you know, that thing that nobody really enjoys. And when you've got children as well, there just seems to be a load more of it. And it was really getting her down, and she did a lot more of it than a partner because, you know, he worked full time, etc. And so because we couldn't change the fact that she needed to do housework, you know, we talked about the various outsourcing. Can you bring someone in to do the housework for you? But that wasn't an option. So actually, how are you going to make it fun? And this person enjoyed a particular sport. I'm sure it was tennis. So I asked her to talk about why she loved tennis so much and the game of tennis, and really getting her to lean into that, those feelings that she has when she's playing tennis, because it really lights her up. And then we talked about, right, how can you make your housework a game of tennis? And she got so excited. I got so excited because we were talking about putting music on, getting the kids involved, you know, practicing your shot, getting the washing in the washing basket, you know, all of these things. So you could think about the things that you really enjoy and try and sort of map it across and see if that works. I don't think I can think of any other examples off the top of my head. I think it would be changing the meaning of what it is. You know, for example, if one of the things that drains you is we have certain family members that maybe don't fill us up. Maybe they drain us a little bit more than they fill us up. Maybe our mothers, who knows? So if you can't stop seeing your mother and you're not prepared to stop seeing your mother, then actually you need to change the meaning of seeing your mother. So what comes up actually when you think about meeting your mum? What are the thoughts that run through your mind? What do you imagine happening? And then it's reframing those thoughts. Is it because she has this way of picking out all your faults or whatever? If that's the case, then how can you reframe your feelings around why she does that? Why does she do it in the first place? And then how can you reframe how you feel about it? Is it just because she loves you and cares for you and wants the best for you? And I know that sounds a bit cliche, but that's the widest example I can think of. But it would be about changing how you feel about it. If you can't change the thing and you can't get rid of it, you've got to change how you feel about it. So hopefully that's a good example.
It's a great example. And Rachel, now my next question for you is, who told you my mum is actually flying in from the UK to visit me in Minnesota today? She's coming in as we speak. So,
oh my goodness.
I'm just kidding. No problems with my mum. Love you, mum. all good. So we are running out of time here. It would be remiss of me not to say that I'm a big Joseph Campbell fan.
Yes.
Had his book on my desk, as you mentioned his name. And I think there's a quotation from him worth sharing. If the path before you is clear, you're probably on someone else's path. And that must go mm-hmm. for the path of inspirational leadership as much as anything else, Rachel. Rachel, really appreciate you taking the time to share everything you shared with us today. If people want to learn more, hear from you, join your apply for your course, where do they go? Where should they go to find out more?
Well, I am on Facebook and Instagram and LinkedIn, the usual places, just as Simply Veterinary Coaching or Rachel Paul on LinkedIn. And my website is simplyveterinarycoaching.com. And that's where there's more information about the Inspirational Veterinary Leader Revolution. You can book in to speak with me as well there if you wish. Or you can send me an email and just share some insights with me. I'd love that.
Fantastic. We'll all head there. This webinar has been recorded, so we'll make this available on the PetSap website, petsap.com. If you go to /blog, you'll be able to find the recording there. We'll put links to Rachel's website in the show notes, in the notes that accompany that webinar. Thank you all for attending. Please do head across to petsap.com. We'd love to show you how we help veterinary teams better communicate with pet owners, allow appointment booking, send reminders, organize your wellness plans, stop those phones ringing off the hook so, you, like Rachel says, you have more time to work on the business rather than in the business. Please do go across to petsap.com and we'd love to share all of that with you. Until then, bye for now, and thanks again to Rachel.
Thank you. Thank you very much.